I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Tom Johnson. He's founder of the Institute for Analytic Journalism. He's regional director of the Society for Professional Journalists. And he's working on a project called The People's Data. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. It's always good to be here.
Great to have you. Now, The People's Data, we're talking about data that is collected by the government at taxpayers' expense, and we're talking about making it available to those very taxpayers.
That's right. Governments have, since the beginning of government, I suppose, have collected data and in various forms. And today that continues. And by data, I'm talking about everything ranging from proposals for property development to checks that the government agencies are writing to various vendors. Historically, that data was in ink on paper format, and it was very hard to get at the data to do any analysis. But in the last 15 to 20 years, just about everything today exists as ones and zeros in digital files. So if we can get at that data, it can be used both by the government and by interested economic interests, businesses, etc., but also the citizens to just say, what's going on? ¿Qué pasó con el gobierno?
Yeah, and journalists.
That's right. But surprisingly enough, what we see, there's a worldwide movement going on called the Open Data Movement. I discovered it about 5 years ago, but it really began roughly in 2008. When people realized that governments had all of this data that was ubiquitous and fluid and was open for potential analysis. And so literally in the last 5 years, I've seen governments all over the world who are, or people all over the world who are saying to their government, hey, we paid for you to collect that data, it's ours. In fact, last week, to show an example of how an idea moves around the world, or memes move around the world. Both the governments of, is it Burkina Faso, the West African country?
Burkina Faso,
and Rwanda both announced an open data initiative for those two countries. Now, these are the two of the three poorest countries in the world, right? But they recognize that open data is the feedstock for greater efficiency and quality of administration of government. It's also the feedstock for economic development of all kinds. And the third case is that it is a valuable resource for citizens who are asking, what's government doing? So what we want to do with the project called It's the People's Data is to bring together a wide-ranging group of citizens here in Santa Fe to first conduct a census of what data does the city of Santa Fe have, where is it, in what form does it exist, what kind of file types, for example, and then how do we get that data so that we can, individuals can analyze it, but also the government can do it itself.
It's interesting because access, I mean, there may be all kinds of files and information that exists in binary form, in digital form, somewhere. But first of all, making it available in forms that people can access, and then having that online as opposed to you can access it every other Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the basement of the parking garage or something like that. I mean, there have been historically real limits to what people have access to.
That's right, and part of that is self-imposed. Starting about 15 years ago, governments at all levels, and for good reasons, started saving their data as PDF files. For example, the budget, current budget for the city of Santa Fe is about 150 pages long. And if you look at that PDF document, you see that a third to half of those pages clearly have been generated from an Excel file and saved as PDF. Well, if I want to analyze any of that data, let's say how much of what proportion of the budget is going to supply the libraries or to support the libraries, then I have to take the time or the expense to extract that ink on paper / PDF data, pull it out to get it back into a spreadsheet so I can start to say, well, has the spending for libraries changed in the last 5 years?
Right.
Consequently, as a taxpayer, we are paying twice for that. So one of our goals with this project is to try to shift the perspective of government to put the data that it has up in the original file format, put it up there as an Excel file, and put it up there as quickly as possible so that we don't have to do that extra step.
Would that make the data vulnerable to being tampered with?
That's been one of the arguments, but the fact is that the PDF files are not untamperable. That is, you can work them by simply using, I can think of six different programs that you can edit a PDF file and save it back with the same file name, and so you don't know that changes have been made in many cases. But also there are programs that are possible to compare versions of files one to another. So if this is really a serious problem, or is suspected of being a serious problem, you could in real time say, does file A accurately represent what's at file B, or vice versa?
What rights do we have as citizens, constitutional and otherwise, about, with respect to the people and the institutions that are collecting this data?
Essentially, we have rights to all of that data, but the bigger issue is out of privacy, because some of this data will have pieces of information in it that properly so should not be made public. But for example, I'm looking here at a 25-page list of the databases that the municipalities in New Mexico are supposed to maintain. And one of those is simply called a tenant file, and it's records concerning family units certified to receive public housing assistance. Well, maybe there will be information in that file that should be redacted. I concede that that can be the case, but what we've had in the past is government agencies erring on the side of limiting the data and saying, well, let's not give anything out because we might make a mistake. And we hope to flip that perspective to say, let's start with the assumption that we're going to give everything out and make everything available and then start to pare it back.
What is the scope of this project, the People's Data? I mean, you've got a lot of coalition partners who are all interested in making data available.
We do. We are working very closely with the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, and we have been, this project has been endorsed by your station, KSFR. Now, the New Mexican newspaper is behind it. We're going to be actually meeting eventually in the New Mexican and been promised office space down there. We are having conversations right now with the League of Women Voters, with the New Mexico Press Women. But what we want to do is to reach out to everybody across the political spectrum, because the argument is that it is the people's data. We don't care who you voted for or how you're registered, but let's get this data out there and make it available so that anybody can use it for whatever their particular objectives are.
Are you getting genuine bipartisan support?
Frankly, I've looked for and trying to reach out to the Republican Party and the Tea Party in Santa Fe, and I haven't been able to make that contact yet. But I am from other organizations of citizens who are interested in what goes on with the government. Now, let me stress that this particular aspect is really just a pilot project. I presented this in April to the National Board of the Society of Professional Journalists and asked for their endorsement of it, and eventually I hope we will get some financing from the SPJ to do that. But we want to use Santa Fe as a pilot project, and I hope that a year from now we will be able to write a cookbook that we can distribute to communities of all sizes around America. Journalism organizations, civic organizations, to say, here's the step-by-step way that you could do that, understanding that everything's going to have to be modified along the way. But that's one of our goals.
Now, there are some cities who've already done a pretty good job, like Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Chattanooga, Tennessee, Grand Island, Nebraska, and then bigger cities, of course, New York and San Francisco are doing a very good job. Yesterday, I saw that Oakland, California, for example, has a live map of calls for service to the police department. And literally within minutes, a call for service goes up in a database, which is downloadable, but also it's pinpointed on a map, so people can see what's happening in their neighborhood at any particular time. That particular aspect of policing is not new. Cambridge, Massachusetts, Portland, Oregon have been doing it for 15 years, and police departments have found that it really works to help get support in their community and from neighborhoods if they do that kind of data release. But also, there is one company that we're talking with that, because it also supports nonprofits, a company called Socrata, SOCRATA.com, which essentially maintains the back end of the database and the online view of data information so that you can take the data, see maps if that's what you works for your situation, see bar charts, etc., along with the data itself. So if anybody is interested, take a look at Socrata.com and you'll find out information about what Chattanooga is doing, for example.
When we look at a city like Chattanooga, and it's so interesting, I mean, some of these cities, you would have, if you were to take a map of the United States and just say, guess which cities are doing great with open data, you know, somebody somewhere, like an innovative mayor or another city official, said, okay, what are we going to do to turn our city around? And that becomes part of it, and it has real economic development implications.
Precisely. And that's what happened in Grand Island, Nebraska, which is a city of 50,000 plus or minus. I watched a webinar last week where they have only two people in their city government who have implemented this, two analysts working there and got on board with it. And so, yes, that getting the data out there helps first government become more efficient itself. That is, the water department people can quickly see what the planning department people are seeing, who can quickly see what the paving department is seeing. And so you get great efficiencies there. Secondly, if all economic decisions, especially for business development and economic growth, are based on taking in data and making, analyzing that data and making decisions based on that. So if we want to have any kind of broad economic development in Santa Fe, people are going to do their research to find out what is Santa Fe in a multi-tiered way of looking at it. And so it's those are the two big payoffs for this movement.
How is Santa Fe doing so far with open data?
Mixed results, I would say. For example, if you go to the Santa Fe website, you'll see that it has a multi-page index on the web looking at various documents and data. On the other hand, they have this thing called the Santa Fe Checkbook Registry. It's up to date, it's in terms of the entries, but it is limited in that if you look at that checkbook registry, you'll see the date that a certain amount was paid, it will show the account that it was drawn on, it will show who got paid, and it will show how much the payment was, but you have no ideas, can't figure out what that person did to get that payment.
So right. John Smith received a check for $2,000 from the general fund.
That's right.
What does that tell you?
Exactly so. And so, as I say, it's a good effort, but in terms of database management and presentation, we're at least 10 years behind the curve of what's happening. Starting with about 5 years ago when there was a surge of cloud-based programs that allow for the analysis, the cleaning, and the presentation of data, we ran into a thing a couple weeks ago, Santa Fe County, which I was looking at its check registry, and it turns out they were paying money to the Boot Barn. And I was trying to figure out, well, why is the county paying the Boot Barn? Well, a reporter friend of mine contacted them, and they said yes, in 2014, the county paid about $84,000 to the Boot Barn. I said, well, that's, are we buying boots and gloves for all the workers of the county? Well, yes and no. What the reason why they supplying that kind of stuff is that it's from the union contract. I say, well, that's fine. Where's that union contract? And so it's that kind of multi-tiered data that citizens should be able to see.
Yeah, I mean, you have public institutions, and even if there are legal requirements for that information, for that data to be available, they're continually doing business with private companies, as in the example you gave, and I would guess there's kind of a gray area in making that data available.
Well, it could be. There are some, and there are a few cases about intellectual property, for example, where a vendor will say, we can't give this out because people see what's going on. Well, those have not been very deeply tested in this state or nationally. And so I think eventually that's going to come. But mostly we want to be able to see, I think, what are citizens getting for their money. Here's an example. The New Mexican has a story this morning about the governor going, making three trips to Mexico, spent $20,000 supposedly to develop trade. Well, that's fine. I think that could be is an appropriate expenditure, but what I want to know is what's the return on investment of that? What trade has changed? What are we now selling to Mexico that we didn't sell? And what are the metrics that the government is using to say this is a good investment?
And with whom did she meet and what was discussed? I mean, those are things. Where was it? I forget where I was reading, but somebody had written that ideally public officials and institutions should be utterly transparent and private citizens should have maximum privacy. And it's kind of flipped right now. I mean, we're being continually spied on.
Yes, right.
All of our emails are essentially in a database in Washington, D.C. or environs somewhere. Our phone calls are all monitored, whether it be metadata or actual voice data, and we can't figure out what the heck is going on in many of our public institutions.
That's right, and it's a fluid environment. For example, there's a new concept called in law and in Information Act laws called content of capture policies. Case came up in a town, Delaware, Ohio, where there was a case where somebody had suggested that to the city council, it's a small town of 20,000 people, that cats should always be on leashes if they're outdoors. This, as you can imagine, became a very contentious issue. Right,
but written by a non-cat owner.
The pro-leash and the anti-leash people. Well, what happened there is that the city council has a Facebook page. That's the official city council's Facebook page. And so people started commenting on that. Simultaneously, individual council people had their own private Facebook pages. And so they got into their discussions and commentary on that on these private pages. And so the broad perspective is that if a elected official or a public employee is conducting business, in quotes, conducting business online in digital format, that then becomes a public record. And so the question is the city responsible for also capturing the content on the private Facebook pages that are discussing public business? So this is an evolving factor in this whole issue of public records and emails and what do we do with that stuff.
We're talking to Tom Johnson of the Institute for Analytic Journalism and the Society for Professional Journalists about the People's Data Project. And with respect to private emails and stuff like that, I mean, we need to look no further than Hillary Clinton conducting international business on her private email account.
Servers, yeah. Really stupid.
Well, it was following in the footsteps of the Bush administration who were doing that. And those a lot of the information about how business was conducted or how policy was conducted during the Iraq War was unavailable because of that.
That's right. And or going back to the Nixon administration, tape machines that they were controlling and so forth. So,
yeah, and that is there's been a new book written about that, which I think is a very interesting read, but that's another subject. Okay, but back to Santa Fe and New Mexico and open data, what's the first step? Like, what are you doing now?
Well, New Mexico has a relatively good Inspection of Public Records Act law, in that it clearly defines that all file formats, for example, are open for public inspection. So it doesn't matter if you have a digital database or if you have an ink on paper database. It doesn't matter if you have maps or if you have digital files that are used to generate the maps. All of that kind of stuff is open and available. The big challenge, and this is true worldwide, I think, and certainly in the United States, is that the technology to use that kind of data and to get at it is challenging and it's difficult, but the bigger problem is cultural. That is, public employees who by and large are reluctant to make a mistake, appropriately so, or fear that they might make a mistake by putting it out there. And so what we hope to do with this project, it will be a success long term if we, for example, can change the job title in government agencies from public records custodian to public records provider, and to get the mindset among public employees that part of their job is to make the people's data readily available, promptly available to the people.
When we talk about records being available, whether they be in digital format or not, the things that are in digital format, are they by definition available online, or do you have to like go somewhere?
No, they're not necessarily available online. They could be more increasingly so, but all statutes talk about a public records retention and deposition schedule. As I said, there's a state law governing local government records retention and deposition that lays out how long specific records need to be maintained. It's called records retention period, which can vary from typically 3 to 6 years, but some of them are supposed to be kept in perpetuity. So that's one of the factors. I think increasingly we will see that because digital storage is getting so cheap, and doesn't take physical space, that we will see just about all records kept forever in various forms. Now, in the city of Santa Fe, it's unique in that you can file an Inspection of Public Records Act with the city, but you can't make that request electronically. You have to go down to the city attorney's office and give them a sheet of paper and so forth, which is a bit behind the curve. So it
definitely screens a lot of people out.
That's right, yeah.
Which is probably intentional.
It could have been, or it might have been when the system was set up 10, 15 years ago, that was the way that you had to do it. Today, we no longer really need to do it that way, and so we hope that we can encourage the city to make a major review of its policies and practices.
To do a project like this, you need some really superb, intense, geeky folks.
Some. That's the advantage of being in Santa Fe, where we have a community here, thanks to the Santa Fe Institute and thanks to Los Alamos, where we have some intense, geeky folks. Yeah, but also, what has happened in the past, as I say, 5 years especially, is that there's been a blossoming of new digital tools that largely exist on the web, that somebody with an afternoon's training can figure out how to use. For example, there is a tool broadly called web scraping, where you essentially can write a fairly simple program that says, go to this website, download all the information that you see for today on this website and put it over here in a file. Then, however, that data has to be cleaned up, because one of the things in analytic journalism we talk about is that all data is dirty. So we have to be able to make sure that East Palace, E-A-S-T, Palace Avenue, A-V-E, is the same as E period, Palace, A-V-E-N-U-E. Well, thanks to Google in this case, there's a tool now called OpenRefine, where you can put in all of those addresses, and OpenRefine will look at it and say, do you mean these four different forms to be the same thing? Pick one.
Right.
And so that kind of stuff can be done. At the same time, we need people who are by and large energetic and curious, who will take a schedule of questions, go down to the water department in Santa Fe and say, interview somebody to fill out who is the vendor of this database, what are the variables in this database, do you have the what's called a code schema that describes the definitions for all the variables, etc. So we need a wide range of interested people is all we need.
So we're talking about open data and having a real step forward in access to data for Santa Feans in the city, or for everybody, but in the city of Santa Fe, New Mexico. When this is accomplished, how could it work? Like, how could it benefit the city?
All we can do in a limited way is looking at what's happened in other cities already.
Yeah.
For example, a couple of them I'm familiar with are Manchester, England, where the city and the region of Manchester opened up its data on transportation, buses, trolleys, etc., and multiple systems that needed to be integrated. Transportation is interesting because that industry has its own set of file types. So one of the things that you want to do in transportation is measure your passenger load from stop A to stop B and B to C, but then also from A to C, right? And so that takes some slicing and dicing of the data. Manchester released all of the data for all of its transportation systems, and what very quickly happened was some smart programmers and developers came in and developed an app that allowed you to say, this is where I am, and you could pull that down from the satellite on your smartphone, and I want to go there, route me. And so the app then would say, well, you get on bus 16 and you ride it to this stop, and then you get off and you will be waiting a minute and a half because then now the trolley comes in and you go someplace else. That kind of thing can develop. We also could do again with transportation, and this goes back some time, 10 years ago at least, a friend of mine at the Orange County Register was looking at the bus routes in Orange County, California, and the passenger loads and where the routes were. And what he found was that there was a community where people were domestic workers, and so mostly women would get on the buses early in the morning and they would go to their employers' homes and do housework. The routing, however, emphasized both times and capacity in the higher income residential zones at the detriment of the lower income workers who needed to get there. So the routes essentially were not serving the people who really needed to ride the buses. Well, so Ron did a really amazing kind of study to understand that the routing needed to be adjusted, and in fact the transportation department in Orange County thanked him for doing that work, which they didn't have time to do. In other cases,
did they fix it?
Yes, they made the adjustments. Now, for example, we have here in Santa Fe, I'm glad to say, the bus system took the initiative, and they have an app that you can put on your smartphone, except you have to know the route that you want to take. They don't integrate the bus routes if you need to make a change, that kind of thing. So I suspect we could see smart young people, in many cases, developing those apps. Also, If you look at the list of public records that the state law requires, we have to maintain something called water storage facility files. And these are permanent things, records concerning the design and construction of municipal water storage or storage structures. Well, making that kind of information available to real estate developers or to vendors who sell equipment that needs to be replaced over time for water storage systems and so forth will just increase the efficiency and the speed, and we hope reduce costs in those kind of utility areas.
There's been so much discussion of malfeasance in police departments. I mean, so many people being shot or their body camera's not working, or I mean, there's any number of real genuine problems. How does open data address those kinds of problems, if it does?
It can in a variety of ways, but frankly, for this project, initially, we're going to stay away from police and fire. Because we need to, I think, train a broader base of community, of citizens, to be able to look at that data and understand what to do with it. And it is highly contentious. But there are related areas that we can work on. For example, one of the things that the municipalities are required to keep are called emergency response records. These are record of emergencies, assistance, ambulances, and so forth. We can look at that data and study the response times from the time the call comes in until somebody arrives, what's going on there. We can use those response times then as a baseline to study and then maybe propose alternative response tools. For example, in the city of Dubai a few years ago, they have freeways that are always jammed. It's like Southern California. Well, if you have to get an ambulance down those freeways, it's going to be very difficult and certainly going to slow things down. What Dubai does is that they have EMT technicians on motorcycles and who very quickly can run down the shoulder of the road, bound between the lanes, get to the incident and do a triage and say, yes, send in more ambulances or send in a helicopter or never mind, we've got the problem taken care of. So those, if we have a big pile up on I-25, those kind of alternatives could result from studying the data on response times.
If somebody is listening and they would like to get involved in the open data project here in Santa Fe, is there a role for citizens?
Absolutely. We are having our first organizational meeting on July 2nd at the Santa Fe Community Foundation. It'll be 1 o'clock in the afternoon. People can give me shoot me an email. That address is Tom, T-O-M, at jtjohnson.com. Or we have a Facebook page, just got it up in the last couple of days, called It's the People's Data. And they can contact us there, and I'd love to hear from anybody. Or we can call the station.
Call KSFR.
That's right, yeah. And I hope you'll have a notice up on your...
Well, we will link on SantaFeRadioCafe.org. We will link to your new site. And people can also go to the KSFR website or go to the KSFR site, KSFR.org. Tom Johnson is founder of the Institute for Analytic Journalism and regional director of the Society for Professional Journalists. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.